I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of the Rabona podcast. Once again, I'm Musa Kwonga and I'm joined by Ryan Hun. Michael De Silva is indisposed, but we'll be hearing from him later. And we're here to discuss Manchester United's defeat to Paris Saint-Germain in the UEFA Champions League.
How are you?
I'm good. Do you know what? I'm surprisingly good.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It was going to come at some point.
Well, I think I've said this maybe before, but the absence of Neymar and Cavani from the PSG team actually made PSG more efficient. So you had everyone in a clearly defined role who didn't mess about with the ball, who was supremely efficient. You've got Dani Alves wide, Di Maria, who was superb. Drax was a 10, didn't mess about. Marquinhos, Verratti, very solid. I think Verratti like 94% pass completion.
Yeah, he was great.
And Mbappe, who really to me was always really a true 9. Started as a winger, but is now a true 9 for PSG. And they just looked like a really well-balanced team.
Mm. Do you remember when we covered the draw?
Right.
And at the time, Mourinho was still in charge at United.
Yeah.
And at the time, I actually said that I would fancy United against PSG. I think that Mourinho wouldn't have had any qualms with really, really spoiling that game. And actually, I think that under Solskjaer, he's, kind of freed United a little bit to play. And that actually played more into PSG's hands.
Absolutely agree.
So I think even though United, it's very easy to say this in hindsight after the game, but I think Thomas Tuchel would have rather played an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer Man United side as opposed to a Jose Mourinho side, because I think they would have gone a little bit more toe-to-toe. And you kind of saw that actually the first half. It felt very much like a, dropping that massive cliche, but it felt like a little bit like a boxing game. People, they were finding each other out, little kind of jabs. The real blow was obviously at halftime losing Lingard and Martial, which just took.
You can argue that
so
Solskjaer
much.
Blinked, actually. You can argue that he blinked by bringing on Alexis Sanchez and not bringing on Lukaku. By bringing on Sanchez, he was hoping to do like for like Sanchez as a false nine, as he played for Barca, actually, and press really high up and link the play. Unfortunately, that player no longer exists in Sanchez. He's no longer a link player.
Yeah, I mean, can I ask you as a United fan?
Yeah.
How are your feelings towards Sanchez? And I'm not trying to like get you to kind of slang him off here, but I mean, it's been a year now since he signed, just over a year. And you and me have obviously spoke about him a number of times before he went to United. You know, what kind of player is he now?
I think he's physically spent
you
at
think?
That level. Yeah, I think he is. I mean, people say, oh, it's not fair to say that. But look at what he's been putting in. At this point, it's no question of desire. He really wants to make it work. I think he's a proud player. He showed that, you know, in his entire career. And who wouldn't want to perform to the highest level against PSG? But it's just not, the gas is not in him anymore. It's not there. He's never been the greatest combination player, actually.
No.
Not really. He loses the ball far too much for that. But he's lost, I think, the explosive part of his game, which made him dominant, dangerous.
Mm.
And now that he has to play this slightly more sedate role, he doesn't have the explosive pressing. He doesn't have the confidence from distance. He doesn't have the confidence, one-on-one ability to step away from a man after he's beat him on the dribble. So it's just really it's painful because it's happening in plain sight, but it's nothing we didn't see happen to Shevchenko, to Torres, to Rooney, to Schweinsteiger. These are players who have been playing flat out since their teens. And it catches up with you. And I think that's what's happened here.
Yeah, I mean, he was quite ineffective when he came on.
He
Sanchez.
Was.
And to be fair, though, his pass stats weren't too... I mean, he only attempted 16 passes,
right.
Completed 14, got the stats up on StatZone, and they were very sideways and
exactly.
Backwards.
When he tried to penetrate, he couldn't. Mm.
But there was that amazing stat as well, was, you know, no key passes, no dribbles, yeah. No take-ons. You know, as infuriating a player as he can be in terms of how much he turns the ball over, you know, he he can be decisive. And I've not seen that player at United.
Well, it's just, I just have some sympathy to the extent that I have sympathy with any professional athlete who is trying to extend themselves and it's just not in them anymore. Look, I was never anything more than an amateur footballer, right? But the day that I knew I was done playing 11-a-side amateur football, we're playing against a team called Prenzlauer Teufel, the Prenzlauer Devils, I think it was. And I dispossessed the centre-back and ran the keeper. This was a promotion game. So if we won this game, we'd go through automatically as one of the promotion top two spots, well, into a playoff. It was 3-2 up with 5 minutes to go. I win the ball off the centre-back. I'm going to go around the keeper. I knock it around him. I didn't have the pace to outpace the centre-back and put it into an empty net.
Oh, man.
And that's when I knew I was done. And I was literally, it was like I was running uphill. I suddenly lost this acceleration. I'd had my entire, you know, football playing life. And I look at someone like Sanchez trying to explode into that space beyond the fullback, and it's not there. It's not in him anymore. And you have to sympathise with that.
Yeah, I mean, luckily, you know, I'd never had the pace to lose. So I was, you know, I have to... First yards in your head, Musa.
Some listeners will be like, fake news, Musa, you were never quick. I'm sure there's some listeners out there. But anyway.
Okay, so first defeat for Solskjaer.
Yeah.
Nothing major, though. I thought his interview after the game was really quite impressive, actually, because he just said, he was very calm, and he just said, this is, you know, we haven't played against a team at this level for a while, and you could tell. And I think you could tell, actually. They were maybe, could have been a bit braver in the first half where they had, I think, probably... shaded the first half, Man United, I think, for me. They had a...
I agree.
But maybe, yeah, maybe a little bit, you know, a little bit with the handbrake on.
PSG are the best team United have played since Solskjaer took charge.
Yeah, for
sure. The best team. And let's not forget that PSG, at their peak in the Champions League, I mean, they just swatted Liverpool aside. Swatted them aside. Before anyone realised quite how good Liverpool were, PSG dismissed them. The way they beat them in the Parc des Princes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people completely dismissed PSG after the Liverpool game at Anfield, forgetting that they were without Verratti and very early in Thomas Tuchel's kind of tenure there. And Verratti is such a key player for them in midfield, and they've had a lot of rejigging to do in midfield this season. You know, there was a few things about them being not even really a football club anymore, which I thought was a little bit harsh.
Bit much, yeah.
The thing that is different about them this season is how flexible they are, and that's Tuchel. Like, Thomas Tuchel is...
different level.
I mean, you know my feelings about Thomas Tuchel. Like, I'm a bit of a fanboy. He is just seemed... There was a great piece that you linked me to, Simon Cooper's piece for ESPN,
right?
This week, which is well worth a read, actually. Go and search it out. And it gives you a little bit of insight into how deeply intense he can be as a coach and how his standards are extremely high, considering he's not really won a huge amount. But how I found... The thing I found really, really interesting was the comparison with Emery in there about how Neymar's managed, for example. So Neymar's out injured. He will text Neymar before games and stuff like that, or training sessions, and be like, you know, we miss you, you know, hope you're good. Understanding full well that Neymar really needs that or wants that from a manager. In the same way that when he was at Mainz, he found a player was really highly motivated by win bonuses and money. He was like, that's fine. We play into that. We win, you get your money, kind of thing. I found that really interesting. Not the most interesting piece in the article, though, which was the fact that he...
That is quite fascinating, yeah.
Managed to spend 3 weeks in Italy and not touch pizza or pasta.
Monstrous. That makes me not trust him a little bit, if I'm honest.
It kind of does, but also...
I'm a bit judgmental, I'm sorry.
That's just because I can't be in Italy for 24 hours and not go near pizza or pasta.
24 minutes in my case. Once I was in Italy and there was a connecting train...
trying
and
to we take had, it through security.
No, it's worse. We had a connecting train. I was in Perugia, we had a connecting train, and there was less than an hour, and I still went to the ice cream parlour. And it was like, it was a bit of a walk between the stations. It wasn't like ones that you had to like walk down the road.
Anyone who knows you knows what you...
On this podcast...
You've got a sweet tooth. That's
listen,
what I'm saying.
Well, I feel very
Should
attacked.
Should we move on? All right, so Paul Pogba got sent off.
Oh no, yeah.
Probably justifiably, I think.
Do you know, I felt so bad about that because I just thought to myself, he'd actually been quite good.
Do you know what? I think he deserved to go, but the thing that's going to annoy me about that is that it's...
It will now become about Pogba in big
games. It's a lot of people's like, aha, see, I told you kind of thing, which is just not fair.
Whereas he actually really pushed the game forward in many ways, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I think United had a really hard time in midfield because Marquinhos and Verratti were...
different level.
I think Marquinhos was probably my man in the match, actually.
Yeah.
I thought he's incredible. Someone who doesn't really get taken seriously. No, he's like 24, 25. Okay. I think. You know, I thought Ander Herrera, our guest on the show today.
Absolutely.
There was a bit in the second half where he was a bit like, this is a tough task.
For sure.
I thought, yeah, Pogba should have gone. I thought Kimpembe should have gone.
Right.
I also think Young should have gone.
Young should have got a straight red for that. He's lucky.
That was really naughty.
Nani got a straight red for high foot in the against Real Madrid and Sir Alex Ferguson's last season, a high foot where he didn't see the man coming.
Yeah, I remember that.
Straight red. By that reckoning, I mean Young shoved Di Maria was going at almost full speed, and he shoved him down that sort of ditch that goes off the pitch.
I mean, anyone who's been to Old Trafford close to the pitch will know how steep that bank is.
Right.
It's really, really steep.
Down that bank, into the metal hoardings.
And at the bottom, it's brick. Yeah. So it's essentially like a brick wall, like a garden wall. So dangerous. At first, it looked like Di Maria could have been quite seriously hurt, but he was fine.
Only because it didn't catch him quite badly, but it was the intent was there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, running down that with studs on as well.
Yeah.
What did you make of Di Maria?
I thought Di Maria was superb, both from set pieces, but also on the break in transition. Him and Mbappe very clearly targeted Young for his positioning and his sort of relative lack of speed. And it really paid off. Everything that really happened in open play came down the right-hand side.
Mm.
Luke Shaw got a fairly easy ride because he wasn't the side they picked off. But yeah, Di Maria was superb. Obviously, he was returning to Old Trafford after a pretty awful time there under Van Gaal, and he proved his point.
I don't want to stir it up a little bit, but I couldn't figure out why he got booed. Was there, because I knew he didn't, I know he had, the season he had there wasn't great, and I know he left, but was there anything else? Did he come out and say anything about United? Or
No, it's just the sense that he was mailing it in, and a lot of the reports came out after his departure from the club that he was never really invested. I mean, I think there was a sense in which he didn't want to leave Madrid, which can't be blamed for. You know, it's pretty heartbreaking. He loved that club, you know, Champions League.
Mm.
You know, in the final, he was a man of the match.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're shipped out to Madrid. You know, shipped out to Madrid to United. His personal circumstances were difficult. His house got robbed. It got burgled.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm not sure of his family there at the time, but it's pretty traumatic. And there was also talk that players in the team were like, you know, he's not committed, doesn't have the courage.
Mm.
And actually, slightly unfair, because Di Maria began for United in explosive fashion.
Yeah, he was really good. He's got that amazing, like, kind of scoop.
The chip on the run against Leicester, yeah. It's an amazing chip. And as a player who is devastating, and, you know, if you look at, like, Di Maria for Argentina, strong argument that if Di Maria plays the World Cup final, Copa America finals, Messi has three trophies.
I think there's a real thing about Di Maria that he's not a number one guy. He's a two or a three guy. And that's not saying that he's not good enough to be a number one guy. I think it's more of a
personality thing.
And when he came to United, he was a big money signing. He was a massive signing, and it was very much like he's the new kind of main man there.
Right.
I mean, I think that's probably fair, right?
I think it's absolutely fair.
And that can be quite intense for a lot of players.
Not everyone likes it. Exactly.
Yeah. So I think you've seen that as someone like PSG, who's really turned it around, and he's not the main focus, or even the second, or potentially even the third main focus. You know, you've got Neymar, Mbappe, Cavani. From an attacking point of view, but also from a, you know, like a profile or marketing point of view, there are so many superstars in that team that I think he can kind of go under the radar a little bit. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to be the, you know, leading the team talk and stuff like that.
But he will always, that's the thing about, he will always step up.
Yeah.
In a team where he feels valued, Di Maria is just an unbelievable weapon. His ability on the break, not only to begin moves, but to end them.
Mm.
He can initiate, he can combine. And you see him against France, for example, the only time in the entire World Cup that France looked genuinely rattled, not even in the final, to be honest, even though Croatia were better for about an hour of that World Cup, if we're being honest. The only time they were genuinely rattled was when Di Maria decided to go into warp drive either side of half time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the moment he struck, Di Maria had a really quiet game against France in that second round. Then he scores from distance. He's the only person that made Pavard look human in that tournament.
Yeah. I wish he'd taken a sip of that beer, though.
That would have been incredible, really. What would he got?
Pinky out. You know,
it was so gangster.
That would have been really funny.
It was gangster.
So, second leg, 2-0 down.
With Pogba gone. To be honest with
tough,
you.
Right?
We're toast. I'm being honest with you. I'm not just saying that because it'll be negative, but.
Do you know what, though? It wouldn't surprise me again. I think I'm the fence sitter in this situation, but
yeah.
If United scored three at the Parc des Princes, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, and I think that if you want anyone who's going to be trying to instill that old school United
spirit,
then you've got the guy who scored arguably the most important goal in their history, or one of, did it very late, and was around that team that was notorious for doing that. You never know. I mean, I think that
I like Tuchel your optimism.
I'm totally chickening out of making a call, I suppose. But I think that this PSG are a little different. You know, Tuchel he's a different kind of coach. And
he's brutal.
I think he's the perfect kind of profile coach for that squad. And
he's a millennial coach.
Basically. Yeah,
he gets it. Like, you know, that there's no it's no coincidence that he fell out with the older guard, like the sort of Nuri Sahin and the sporting director, and the younger players really blossomed under him.
Yeah.
If you look how many young players really just came to the fore and he really brought out, he got a tune out of Mkhitaryan, which even Klopp couldn't do.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting. So I think you're completely right. And when I say United, I think we're not going to come through is because so much creatively goes through Pogba.
Mm.
And we're sending United to France without him. Who knows what other injuries there'll be. Who knows else will come back. You know, Cavani might be back by then. So it's just, I don't know, it's such an uphill battle. I just don't unfortunately see us overturning that deficit.
Yeah. Should we get on to the Ander Herrera chat?
Absolutely, yeah. So we're very happy to just be bringing a segment from an interview that I conducted with Ander Herrera at Carrington. And Herrera is such an interesting character to me because I think he's been a vital part of United's transition away from Sir Alex Ferguson. A player who actually, I think, would have got quite a few games under Sir Alex Ferguson if he'd been in his squad.
I think Fergie would have loved him.
I think absolutely right. And what's interesting about Herrera is there's a real, not only a fierce tactical intelligence, but a real sense of what it is to be a Manchester United player, which is an elusive quality. We had a chat not only about, you know, his sort of early career at Zaragoza briefly, but also about the art of being a midfielder.
I found it really interesting. I was sat off to the side.
You were indeed, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Just kind of, you know, gate crashing the party.
And he was an interesting character, Herrera, because he's got this incredible intensity, you know, when he sort of sits and answers questions, he's very focused and you can see that actually this is a guy that's incredibly passionate and is a real, he's emerged really as a sort of ambassador. If you look at how many statements have been made by United players after Jose Mourinho's departure and Solskjaer's arrival, Herrera has been consistently someone who's been at the forefront and he's obviously been trusted to get out there and speak about it. But what's great about him is the way that he talks football, I think. He always brings in examples of the players' movement on and off the ball. He's really fascinating about that and particularly about decision making.
Yeah. Should we get into it and then have a little bit of a chat about it after?
Let's do it. Yeah, sure.
Let's welcome to the podcast, Ander Herrera.
Ander Herrera. Okay, first question and the most important question, how often do you get back to watch Real Zaragoza?
It's my club, everyone knows. I've been always saying the same. I think in life you can, I have already said it, but in life you can change a lot of things, but you cannot change the club and the team that you support. It's my team, it's the team that I have in my heart. Of course, I know where I'm playing now. I am playing for Manchester United. I'm playing for probably the biggest club in the world, and I am really, really thankful to that, to the fans, to the club. I really like playing for this club. I enjoy my time here. But I cannot lie. The team that I have in my heart is Real Zaragoza.
Season to get there, yeah.
Of course I do. I've been going to La Romareda, the stadium, since I was probably 3-4 years old. Right. In the beginning with my parents, after with my friends. I have even traveled with the fans to watch some away games. So before being a football player, I was a crazy fan.
Well, the other big question is, again, about your region. It's very important. It's about food. I now live in Germany, and there are things I can't get. There's food I can't get in Germany that I get in England. What food, what dish do you most miss from back home?
Oof, a lot of things, but to be honest, I'm a food lover. I really like to try different things, different food from different countries, but I think we have the same. We have the best. I respect all the.
If you have to pick one meal, though, one.
But
meal.
If I have to pick one, probably the you say shellfish
in yes,
the
yeah.
Shellfish that we have in Spain is fantastic, but also the meat, also the tradition. In terms of food that we have in Spain, everywhere you go, you can eat good.
Right.
You don't need to find the perfect restaurant. Even if you go to a normal bar, you eat fantastic. So I miss the food, of course, but I adapt to England and I also like the English food.
You mentioned when you lost with Bilbao to Atletico Madrid, the Europa League final, was very disappointing.
Yeah.
How important was it for you to win this
European
for
Manchester United. How important was that?
It was, because I remember that time with Athletic Bilbao. We did an amazing competition. We beat Manchester United. We beat Schalke. We beat the Sporting Lisbon. We were the better team of the competition by far. But in the final was like kids against men. And Atletico de Madrid smashed us that day. It was a very tough day because probably you know how important or how passionate are the fans in Bilbao, the special philosophy they have, which makes me feel very proud to have represented that club, because it's fantastic to be an Athletic Bilbao player. But that was a very tough day. I remember the city the days before, full of flags, all the balconies, you say balconies?
Yeah, yeah.
All the balconies with the flags, everyone very excited. The day of the match, all the kids allowed to go to the school with the shirt of the team. So was very, very disappointed. But we gave everything as well. So I can be only proud about what we did, but of course I had I don't know how you say in English, but I had
not the chip on the shoulder or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I had it, and I could take it out when I won it,
right,
with Manchester United. That's why in the celebration, I think I had an interview and I mentioned my teammates, because that was a very tough night and we all have it in our hearts.
Right. What for you is the most important thing as a midfielder? You're like in the middle of the traffic. You know, you're surrounded by everyone running around you. What for you are the most important skills?
Not only in midfield. I think in every position on the pitch, the most difficult quality is to make the right decision. Because you can be quick, you can be strong, you can jump incredibly, you can have the best shot, and you can be able to score goals from 50 yards. But if you don't know when to shoot, when to run, or when to jump, you're lost. So that's why we have the example of Xavi Hernandez,
right,
the Spanish midfielder, now is playing in Qatar,
right,
and he has been one of the best players in the history. He was not tall, he was not quick, he didn't have an amazing shot, he was not very aggressive, he was not the best defensively, but every time he was on the pitch, he was taking the right decision.
What was he doing well? What was the thing that was...
The position, for example, I guess. If he was playing against a very strong player, he knew how to went far from him to receive the ball and to give the right pass. If he was playing against the quickest midfielder, maybe it was better to don't go to try to steal the ball from him and let him to take a wrong decision. And that's what he used to do amazing. And I could give you more examples. I really like, Cesc Fabregas is one of the players that I think has that quality, to take the right decision in every moment. And the example of Xavi is the best.
It's the playing the ball out. Xavi would get the ball from far back and manage to play the ball.
Yeah,
it's the hardest pass in football.
For example, Xavi had an amazing pass in between the lines, but he was not giving that pass always. Sometimes the team needs to rest, give him simple 3-4 passes, and then look for that difficult pass. And that's Xavi Hernandez. I remember some passes with Messi, 2 meters, 2 meters, and then the other team think the game is slowing down, and then they give the right pass in between the lines to kill them. Football is about taking the right decision. That's why Juan Mata is still playing. And playing fantastically. And I always say to him, he's not the quickest, he's not the strongest. He doesn't have the best shot, but he takes the right decision always in every moment.
Very special player, man,
yep,
isn't it? He's like a kind of an 8 that could play a 6, could play a 10. Yeah.
He is always in the right moment. One of the qualities he has, and I realize watching some highlights, when you see one of us shooting on goal, who is the one that is always ready for the rebound from the goalkeeper? Juan Mata. When you see one of our fullbacks crossing the ball, who is always in the right position on the pitch, in the box? Juan Mata. when the team is struggling and we need an extra midfielder to come to play, who is there? Juan Mata. So that's
he's
why.
He's like a rebounder in basketball, always receiving.
I don't understand too much about basketball, but.
Can I say something about Ander Herrera? As an Arsenal fan, he has wound me up quite a lot over the last few years. And honestly, being there that day when you were chatting to him and meeting him and listening to what he had to say, I found him so impressive. Really, really impressive.
Right.
Someone who I think is a kind of real example for a lot of young midfielders. I mean, actually, I would have loved to have, if we'd had the time, like really sat down with him and got into the nitty-gritty of playing
even scenarios, midfield. Certain
yeah,
games,
just like, you know. What makes, you know, what makes you decide in this situation or this situation? I just found him super interesting.
Yeah,
what
makes Modric so good, for example?
Yeah.
You know, those little tiny nuances.
But yeah, man, I thought you did a good job on that.
Oh, thanks. Well, thank you for coming along. And thanks for being a sounding board for some of the questions and the approach to take. Because
yeah, no worries.
Whenever you talk to footballers, it's very easy to forget their people. It's very easy to forget the footballers are a human. And I was just trying to keep the focus on what is it to be a footballer and a midfielder? In particular, because I think just a few days before we spoke, he'd been taken out of context by a different journalist and was quite upset about that. So it was really nice to sort of sit with him and just be like, look, this is about football. This is about tactics. And
yeah, definitely. Yeah. And also, what was really great was, you mentioned it in your piece, but when we got there, that guy who was trying to get, he had a delivery for Pogba.
Yeah.
And it took him ages. French guy.
There was so much intrigue.
Yeah.
I got some messages on Twitter going, oh, what did a...
I think it was just trainers or shoes or something.
Yeah. Big thank you to Ben Miller for helping us to arrange that interview. Because, you know, Ben was just so helpful. And actually, shout out as well to Karen Shotbolt, Manchester United. I know that often people don't shout out the press team, but Karen was an absolute joy to work with and really enjoyed that.
It was a lovely day. Yeah. Actually, should we mention that we've actually sat down with Ben because Ben is involved in Common Goal.
That's right. Yep.
And we had a chat with Ben about Common Goal, who...
charitable movement, I suppose.
It was co-founded by Juan Mata, about players donating 1% of their salary towards this collective fund that goes to really helping kind of football projects around the world and stuff.
Yeah.
So we've got a chat with Ben that we're going to broadcast on next week's episode.
That's right, yeah. Next Monday?
Really good projects. I think there's over 70 players now on board, considering it's been going less than 2 years.
Gender split 50%, isn't it?
I think it's a really interesting project, and you know, we'll hear more from Ben on Monday. Before you go, because I'm going to call Michael, are you looking forward to this weekend? FA Cup weekend.
Well, am I looking forward to this weekend?
Which Chelsea Manchester United on Monday evening. You'll be hearing from us again before we know how that turns out. I'm looking forward to having a weekend off from Arsenal, actually.
Really?
Is that bad? Yeah, I could do with a weekend off.
Is that bad?
Arsenal have not been good to watch at the moment. We didn't really talk about this on Monday, but ahead of recording, well, we're recording ahead of Arsenal's Europa League game away at Barté. Yeah, Arsenal and a tough watch at the moment. A tough, tough watch. But so a nice weekend off from them.
I'm
going to watch loads of basketball.
That's how it felt for long periods of the Van Gaal and Mourinho eras, to be honest. Mm. So I sympathise with you on that front.
Before you go, quick shout out, don't forget to check Moose's Sunday League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which went up on the site this week. It's I like that piece. That was a good one.
I enjoyed it. Good vibes.
I like the Bellerin shout.
Haha, listen, Bellerin's the dude. I mean, for those who haven't read the piece, it's about if you had to pick a team of world-class players to represent you on a Sunday morning Sunday League football, who would they be? So who are the hard men of world-class football?
Don't forget you can respond, send in your requests or your shouts for that as well, who you'd have in your team, at Rabonamag on Twitter.
Yeah, more than one.
And another quick shout for my piece that went up, the Batman the Force and El Clasico's New Age.
That's brilliant. And that exploration you've done there of the changing face of the Clásico, because for so long the Clásico has been Messi versus Ronaldo and everything else, and it's been a sort of a clash of superpowers, whereas they're both now in a form of transition, moving away from Messi, away from Ronaldo, and the young guard are coming through, De Jong versus Vinicius for the next few years, but
definitely.
It's like sort of X-Men first class now, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also just a little bit of you know, not really appreciating an era that you might be living in a sporting sense until it's gone, you know.
Exactly.
People are too busy bickering over, you know, who's a fraud or who's not or whatever, or who's better. And it's just actually, because it just started out as it was just going to be a Copa del Rey roundup. actually.
Isn't it funny how the sort of the greats of football are receding slowly and the greats in tennis are receding? Like this historic era of tennis is parallel, I think, with the historic era in men's tennis, sorry, parallel with the historic era in men's football.
Yeah.
And they're kind of sort of fading now. It's funny that, anyway, funny how these things coincide.
We're all fading.
And with that, I will fade away from this podcast.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to give Michael a chance.
After the break, I won't be here.
Yeah, so bye, Musa. Right, before we go, Michael's here to talk about Spurs versus Dortmund. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, it's going to take me some time to come back down to earth. 1-0 would have been good. I would have taken that, but 3-0, I didn't see that coming.
No, I didn't. I mean, the first half as well, I actually tweeted that Dortmund were made to pay for really not capitalising on that first half where they were brilliant.
Yeah, like I felt like Sancho was really growing into the game. Like he started off with a couple of heavy touches and I thought, maybe he's going to struggle under the pressure of the occasion or whatever, but he really started to exert himself, and I thought, Spurs need to do something here to prevent this from becoming a bigger problem. But in the second half, Spurs just came out, and I think they tweaked their system a little bit. Vertonghen was a lot more advanced, and yeah, they managed to press a lot more effectively. Harry Winks got on the ball a lot more. And yeah, I mean, I'd say one of the most impressive things about it is that I've never seen Tottenham win that convincingly without Harry Kane.
Yeah.
And that's perhaps the one thing I'll take away from it. I mean, there's the performances of Winks, and I think Juan Foyt was great. Jan Vertonghen, of course, can't mention the game without him. He was by far the standout performer. But this is the kind of game that Spurs wouldn't have won 3 years ago.
Yeah, I thought you could definitely tell that this was another step in their development, I think, in the Champions League.
I think so, yeah. Mm. And, you know, that's why it was so important that Spurs went to Barcelona and got that result, because even though the Europa League represents a more realistic route to silverware for Tottenham, being in the Champions League is going to continue that improvement, and playing against teams like Dortmund and being able to cope with games like this. Yeah, they were absolutely superb. And I think you're right in saying that Dortmund missed an opportunity. They failed to capitalise. And they were missing a couple of players as well, you know, Royce being the key one. And I don't think Goetze really is right for the kind of false nine position. And he got kind of swallowed up by Tottenham's back three, as good as Dortmund were in that first half. But yeah, I think it was a real kind of a marker as to how far Tottenham have come under Pochettino.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the thing that Spurs have been so good at over the last few years, is that each improvement in various areas has been incremental. You know, you haven't had a giant leap or yo-yoed in and out of the Champions League or had a disastrous season. It's been, you know, step by step by step. And I think that, you know, it's a little bit of a cliche looking at statement wins, but especially after that first half, if I was a Spurs fan, I would have been going into halftime a little bit relieved that you'd got out of that 0-0,
yeah,
but also prepared for the worst, really.
It was relief, and you're right, it was like, oh, can we, you know, at halftime I was thinking, I was convincing myself that 0-0 wasn't the worst result in the world.
Yeah, definitely.
And that, okay, well, at least, you know, we can stop them from scoring an away goal. But yeah, it turned out to be a completely different night. And I think it was Oliver Kay from The Times who, he tweeted, I think this was bang on, that this was a night for the unsung heroes at Tottenham, the guys that don't always get the credit they deserve. So Sissoko being perhaps the main one, but Winks, Vertonghen, you know, been so consistent for Tottenham for 6 or 7 years now. Davinson Sanchez, to be honest, I don't think he actually had the greatest game, but he is, generally speaking, a very solid player for Spurs. And Juan Foyt, who I think is getting better and better. And it was that kind of night where it wasn't really a headline act. You know, usually we're talking about a couple of goals from Harry Kane or an unbelievable strike from Son, and Son did play well. But yeah, it was those kind of players that you don't associate with the big moments that really put in a shift for Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, even Llorente scored, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a bit harsh because he's, you know, he scored a couple, hasn't he? But I think coming on and scoring, and that was a, I think that was a really big goal, that third one. the one thing you will probably bet on is that Dortmund will score in Dortmund. And I mean, you saw what they did to Atleti in the group stages. You know, they absolutely demolished them. And going there 3-0, even that isn't really mega safe, is it? But still, no, it's a hell of a lot better than two.
Yeah, I think the tie is far from over, for sure.
And both sides should have players back for the second leg.
Yeah, I mean, you look at... That's what I think made it quite... It was almost... It levelled up, you know. Spurs were without Kane and Ali, but, you know, Dortmund didn't have Marco Reus, for example. But yeah, you're right that the third goal was absolutely huge. I think the first one was pivotal because it really swung the momentum in Spurs' way. And two, yeah, of course, that gave Tottenham a clear advantage. But three kind of makes it a different game. So going into the second leg, I think, you know, Spurs will be relatively happy to sit back. And under Pochettino, that's how Tottenham started out, as a counter-attacking team. And they're more than comfortable to just sit back and soak it up and score on the break. So I see both teams scoring in the second leg, really. But the pressure's on Dortmund now. And yeah, like it perhaps also talks a little bit about the difference in quality between the Bundesliga and the Premier League, because, you know, you've got the Spurs who are third behind Liverpool and Man City, but Dortmund are at times have threatened to run away with the Bundesliga, and for them definitely to come to Spurs and be humbled almost is perhaps a sign of the difference in quality there.
Yeah, I think one thing Jadon Sancho said after the game in his interview, he kept mentioning focus. And I think that after the last few games in the Bundesliga where, you know, they dropped points when they probably should have been 2 or 3 up at Frankfurt, dropped points on the weekend. So actually, I mean, from a Dortmund point of view, coming away from that 3-0 down, I think will maybe give them a little bit of a reality check, because that is a young side. You know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, Spurs maybe 2-3 years ago, where the core ingredients are there, and it's maybe that them as a group haven't progressed deep into a competition like this before. Because there is, you look at the players who were there when they made the final, pretty much none of them are there now. I mean, Goetze didn't even play the final that year. Most of that back line's gone.
I think that's absolutely fair, because, you know, if you look at this stage of the competition last year, and Spurs were beaten, they were beaten by Juventus, and it was really experience that got Juventus past Spurs that night. They just, you know, they're wily old campaigners, and they knew how to grind out the victory and make the most of those small moments. And I think we shouldn't forget that Dortmund are firstly a young team, and their best players are all, well, clearly under 25, but mostly under 21 even. But also they've been going through a difficult spell at home as well. Like, they've gone four games without a victory in all competitions, two in the league, one in the German Cup, and now one in the Champions League. So it's not their finest moment. And it was a good time for Spurs to play them. And how they get out of this will be testament to whether or not they have what it takes to go all the way in the Bundesliga this year.
The second leg falls in a really tricky run of fixtures for Spurs. They've got this weekend off, and then they go to Burnley.
Yeah.
And then Chelsea at home, Arsenal away. Chelsea away, Arsenal at home, and then the second leg before going away to Southampton.
Yeah.
So that's a tough stretch. And if they can come through that with, you know, their league position intact, and then going through to the next stage of the Champions League, I think that's a massive, massive boost for them.
Yeah, well, Spurs are going to go away and do some warm weather training now for a little bit.
This was
a rare luxury. It's closest we get to a winter break in England. But the next game, as you say, is on Saturday week against Burnley, and then they get going again more regularly after that. So yeah, it's an opportunity a rare opportunity for Tottenham to kind of take a breather, because it has been an intense run of fixtures for them. Mm. And someone like Heung-Min Son will really appreciate that break as well, because he's, as we know, been playing games, it seems, 2-3 times a week for the last couple of months at least.
Yeah, so, and the trip for the Asian Cup as well was crazy, because he left it really last minute to go, and then he came back and started playing straight away.
Yeah, I mean, I thought when he came back that it would be they would give him a week off just to recharge his batteries.
Yeah.
But, you know, Harry Kane was out at that time, and obviously there was no such luxury. So he's come straight back into it. And, you know, he has now scored 9 goals in 11 games against Dortmund. He loves playing against them. And this is a record that stretches back to his time in Leverkusen and before that Hamburg as well. So yeah, there's something about Dortmund that he loves.
He's so good, man. He's so good. Like yes. I really like I hate watching him as an opposition fan because he is one of those players who's like, oh man, I wish we had him.
You know? Yeah, but then I think there's going to be it's been mentioned now a few times that he's going to be up there for player of the year. And I'm not a massive fan of individual awards for team sports. I don't think it should be read into too much. But Heung-min Son up there with Firmino, I think. But I think it was Musa actually that mentioned Bernardo Silva the other day as well, and he should definitely be on the shortlist.
Yeah, definitely. Did you catch any of Ajax against Real Madrid, or were you fully in Spurs mode?
I was in Spurs mode. Or I heard that VAR played a part, and then Ajax equalised. Right?
Yeah, and then Asensio scored with a few minutes to go, so it's heartbreak. Okay. Heartbreak for Ajax.
Well, I had Ajax down to win this actually over the two legs, and maybe I should probably catch up with the highlights with that later, but I think Ajax have a great chance.
Yeah, definitely. I think we should have a Rabona work trip for the second leg. Let's see. Do our own warm weather trading.
let's speak to the accountant.
Let's speak to Musa. Right, man. We're going to leave it. We're going to wrap up. So, cool. Yeah, get some sleep.
Yeah, cheers.
Right, that's about all we've got time for on this bonus episode of the Rabona podcast. Thanks to everyone who tuned in. If you are an iTunes or Apple Podcast subscriber, don't forget, please give us a rating and a review, preferably 5 stars. It helps us grow the podcast. Some stuff to look out for. We're going to be back on Monday for another podcast, but make sure you go to @Rabonamag on Twitter. Friday morning, we're going to be posting the first of a new series that we're going to call Rabona Selects, which is some highlights of some football players with carefully selected music. Friday morning, that should go up. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Take it easy. Bye-bye.